White Network presents Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn. Here's your host, Carolyn Yeager.
Good afternoon, listeners, and welcome to the third installment of Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn Yeager on June 23rd, 2012. I apologize for the late start. I want you to know it wasn't my fault. It wasn't the fault of my guest either, but the program, for some reason, did not get scheduled into the system. So, couldn't reach anybody until right after it did start. So, but anyway, thank goodness we are here now, it's all set up. So, I will just continue as though nothing happened. I hope, we still have some listeners, but in any event, it's wonderful to spend the next 2 hours with you talking to my guest today, who really and truly is one of my favorite people. You know, I love Germans, and he is a German with the Greek name, Kairos. He uses that name because he lives in Germany, one of the most unfree countries in the world today. And they say it was enslaved under Hitler. Today, it is the same as then, except the globalist left is in power instead of the nationalist right. So this is the third time Kairos has been a guest on one of my programs. He's been on three different ones. First, the revisionist report on RBN, which was, probably a little over a year ago or thereabouts, or around a year ago. And then he was on the Heretics Hour when it was like 3 o'clock in the morning for him to come on. And now he's on Saturday Afternoon on the White Network, and it is 8 p.m. for him. I will be taking questions for Kairos in the second hour. To ask him a question, just send it in. Just send it in an email to Carolyn at CarolynYeager.com. We will have a top-of-the-hour 5-minute music break. Otherwise, no interruptions to our program today. And, of course, we started exactly 15 minutes late, so we will be finishing 15 minutes after the usual time. So, once again, that email address is Carolyn at CarolynYeager.com. So, Kairos, hello and welcome, and thank you for being so patient.
Hello, Carolyn.
Yes, hello. I always like hearing your voice because I like the way you pronounce your words.
Then let me first of all give you my congratulations for the White Network. I think you created a great thing there. Thank you, and thanks to Tanzafer too.
Okay, well, thank you. That's very nice, very nice. Well, we think it's a great thing too. And we're real happy with it so far, and we're planning on, you know, expanding as much as we can, or as soon as we can. It takes a while to find people who are willing to actually take on a commitment to do a radio program. But we do have somebody who's going to be showing up. I think it'll be a real good extra program. And right now I found that 2 a week is about all I can handle, even though I thought I could do more. But you know, it's a lot of work, and there are other things to do. But anyway, we will be continuing with this, and hopefully what happened earlier won't happen again. But I will, well, okay. Now, you were going to talk today about the German character, and that's how I announced the program. And this had come up in a private conversation, and I don't know how much you want me to say, but you have been doing some research and study and writing on this subject. Is that right?
Yeah, this is right. But at first, let me introduce to the listeners who do not know me. I think many of them will know me now, but other listeners may perhaps not know me from the other interviews with you. They can, of course, read the text of mine that I translated into English with Carolyn's help. It is called White Wrath, and it can be read on kairostheos.blogspot.com. This is K-A-I-R-O-S-T-H-E-O-S blogspot.com. I quit writing nationalist articles for some time now because I have things to do in real life, but I did not quit the nationalist movement. The things we wrote within the last years seem to be the foundation for a coming nationalistic movement that can actually change things. But to change anything, one needs power, and we do not have any power. We write our articles, but we do not change anything with that yet. We are outlaws, no one listens to us, and we cannot form a political party that has a chance to take over. Not here in Germany and not in the United States. What we can do is making a meta-politics, as Greg Johnson calls it. We can develop the cultural basics for coming white society.
All right, so how do you think, that developing the cultural basis is enough? I mean, a lot of people don't want to have all that basis decided for them, but there are people who are more interested in culture who are more interested in that, and others who are more interested in action. Of course, as you said, Kairos, that's totally impossible in Germany. It is not impossible in the United States, but it's not possible to just come right out with it, I guess. So it's difficult. So, yes, so we're dealing with – well, I'm happy to be dealing with culture today and the subjects that we're going to be talking about rather than trying to decide what to do but to, you know, gain some victories. So we can leave that aside. I'm happy to do that. And let's talk about what your insights are. How do you want to start this? Do you want to go over a few things you're going to be talking about, or you just want to go in and start with one part of it?
I wanted to start with saying some more words to the subject of religion, because it's related to is to the whole cultural thing, of course. And the other thing is that I know that some Christian or many Christian listeners did not like what I said about Christian religion in the Heretics Hour, and I wanted to clear some points there.
Good. All right.
I also said that we have to put race above religion, and I meant that. White Christianity is mostly that for most of the Christians, a black Christian is more than a white pagan. They always say, Christendom in Africa or in Asia, but this is none of my interest. I do not care about Christians in Africa. When there's a way to change Christendom in something that is a white-only thing, then I would be glad. But I found no way, and I'm not aware of any Christian sect that had found such a way on its own. Paganism, as I understand it, as I live it, is mostly a racial thing, something that is exclusively for Europeans. I do not care about African paganism, as it is something completely different that is not related to white spirituality. One should not argue against a religion as long as this religion is functional and one has nothing else to offer. But I think we are now at a point where the functionality of Christendom has to be questioned, and it leads to multiculturalism, third world aid, which means feeding millions of enemies of us. And it leads to a kind of peacefulness that is just weakness. And I do not know if Christendom nationally does this or if it's perverted by Jews or something, and I do not care. All I see is that a vast majority is caught deep in the matrix of globalistic lies. And on the other hand, it's not my intention to speak against white Christians and their beliefs. My test of loyalty is this. What does matter more to you, your religious beliefs or your racial ancestry? Everyone who says first is not a friend. Everyone who keeps Christendom or even paganism or his religion above the racial thing is not a friend. Every time when there's a discussion about religion, it is done with respect and politeness until mainstream Christians and atheists join. These are the two poles of the same disease. Either of them think that they own the truth. The atheists think they own the truth, and the Christians do too. All others, no matter if pagan, skeptics, outsider Christian sects, seem to have the ability to respect the beliefs of others. So I just wanted to say I respect all the beliefs of others, but my thing is not the religious thing. My or our problem is the racial thing. So I think we have to repeat it like a kind of mantra, race above religion.
All right, Kairos, I hear what you're saying. I think that puts it, you know, if we say race above religion, we're not crossing out religion, right? So we're saying that race has to come first, and all religion that is acceptable has to be racial or have that racial element to it. So I think that solves the problem right there. Then we don't have to attack people's religion. You know, it really doesn't matter. We know what the official Christian churches are all about, but that's the same for everything that's official. Every official element in our society is tainted with anti-racialism and egalitarianism and universalism. So you have been introduced to the Christian identity form of Christianity, which is totally racial. So there is that. But you know, I know that you and people who are, you have a lot of objections to it for reasons that you don't like the historical basis of it. But wouldn't you say though that if we say, well, whoever is a legitimate helpful participant in this movement would have to say, I put my race first and my religion next. And if they put their religion first and it doesn't have the racial element to it. Like I said, Christian identity does, but that's the only one that I know. Then it's no good. All right. So if people say that, then that would solve the problem, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I think so. Paganism has this racial component too, a strong one. Paganism is just for Europeans. There's no other one allowed. There are also for pagans who are just like some hippies that like medieval times and like to smoke ganja and stuff, and they call themselves pagans. So it must be the same for real Christians to see those Christians who are in all this multicultural thing, as it is for me to see those hippies calling themselves pagans.
Well, that's right. That's right. Yeah. You know, your idea, you have your own idea of pagan, just like some Christians would have their own idea of Christian when they speak about it. But they're totally racially, they totally take they see it only as for the white race. So, it's the same for them. And you're right. There are all kinds of pagan movements, paganism of all sorts that wouldn't fit in. And what about a non-European paganism? Right? As you did mention that too. So we can't just say paganism.
It's called the same, all this voodoo stuff and thing that the niggas do, but it is not the same. The ancient European religion is a really beautiful spirituality, and I think what is done in Africa has nothing to do with beauty. but this is just my opinion.
Yeah, but even other, non-African, you know, it's not just in Africa. Anything that's not white European doesn't belong in our, you know, in what we call, pro-white or white advocacy movement.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
See that. So, well, I brought you something for the show today. There are so many articles about the German character, and so many people are talking about the German character, and it's always the same. There's the same pattern that leads to the same things and to a 1933 and something. And so I thought, let's talk about it. But let's begin by the roots. Let's begin by a word, a German word that defines the German character more than anything else in my eyes. And this word is Bildung. The German word Bildung is a word that can be hardly translated. When is someone gebildet? The best translation is educated, but education is not Bildung. Education translates to Erziehung in German. In present, most people use Erziehung to describe the process that children have to undergo to become adults. It is about social issues like politeness, teamwork, and so on, whereas Bildung is more the gathering of knowledge. But there was this man, Wilhelm von Humboldt. He was a great reformer of the German educational system. His ideal of Bildung was something real German. Bildung, as Humboldt understood it, was more than just having knowledge. It was the ability to use this knowledge to do something good. To be able to do so, one has not only to learn the facts, he has to learn the rules of logic and of science and be able to use them to solve new problems. And he has to have an ethical conscience so that he really does something good and not something bad. And all this together is Bildung.
All right. And how much do you think that the German people follow that or have that instilled into their soul? And also, would you equate the word soul with the word character in a kind of a loose way, maybe, but not in a religious way so much? But
I speak of the German soul because I think that people have souls just like individuals. You can say German character, so this is a non-spiritual, a non-religious word, but I say soul because I think we individuals, we have a soul that is more than our body, more than our mind, and I think this is true for the people of the world too. Every people has a soul, but this is not really important for what I have to say. It's just I wanted to state my opinion on this. You can exchange soul with German character. Yeah, you can do so. Then let me explain what I mean with an example. My example are Asian people. Asian people are very, very good at learning facts. They have a big memory in their brain, but they have not the form of creativity whites have. Everything the Asians are good at is just a copy of white inventions, including all this computer stuff they do. They may be well educated, but they have no Bildung. Asians are not a people that creates culture, but just one that preserves culture. So it must have been that the culture the Asians have and preserve was created by some other race former times. To preserve a culture is more than barbarism, as we know it from example from black people in Africa, but it is less than white creativity. When Asians have to do exams, they can say every solution that is written down in the books. They can memorize dates, facts, names, and happenings and tell them. And they can memorize it better than whites. But they are not able to see the greater scheme of things. When they are asked to solve new problems with their knowledge, they fail. When Asians learn a language, they learn very fast some important phrases they have to use in all their life. Most of them who do not need more stop on this point, just use their phrase. The others will learn more phrases, but they will never understand the true meaning of the things. They will never discover the secrets of the language. And this has to be because they are genetically different to whites. The Asian soul is about following orders, working hard, being part of a big community. They are less like individuals and more like ants. And here comes my point. The German soul is the opposite of that.
Okay.
I think I will have to explain this because
yes.
Every now and then some idiot says that what I said about the Asian soul was true about the German soul, that we are just following orders, being part of a community, we are more like ants and not individuals. But mm-hmm. The German soul is the opposite of that. People who say so, they don't understand the German soul. When we follow the laws and we are honest in them, then they say we do it because we are slavishly following authority. When we look after each other and build a community, they say we were no individuals but just easy controlled mass. And of course we are excluding all the poor aliens. When we fight for our rights, we are Nazis. And when we do not fight, we are wimpish. People, even those who behold themselves our comrades and members of our movements, have nothing but contempt for the German soul, or at least for what they imagine it is.
Well,
they are mostly following the Jewish propaganda about us. We are the worst enemy of the Jews, so they tell the most fantastic tales about us. It began long before the Second World War, even before the First. There are these tales that in the First World War were so many patriotic German Jews. This is one of the biggest lies ever, and nearly everyone believes it here in Germany. Nearly everyone believes that in World War One, in the First World War, there were so many patriotic Jews on the fighting for the German cause. The truth is that Germany had as good as won in 1915, as you might know, and suggested a status quo onto peace with terms like let's pretend we never fought to England. It was Jews in Britain, in Germany and in the US that talked England into continuing the fight, giving money and the support of the US forces to the Brits.
Well, let me just put in here, you know, the difference between the Germans' attitude toward these wars and their enemies' attitudes was that the Germans really wanted to live in peace with these other people because the Germans were confident of their ability to do well for themselves in the community of nations. That's just how it appears to me. But the other nations, led by Britain and France, did not want to live in peace and compete with Germany, and so they wanted to use war and their ganging up, you know, on Germany and Austria and Austria-Hungarian Empire and so on, to do away with with Germany as a competitor, would, you know, and so that's very different. And they turn that around and say, well, Germany had this aggressive wanting to win attitude and rule over the others, which is absolutely false, isn't it?
Right. This is one of the biggest lies about the First World War, that Germany wanted it. The Reich never wanted war. They were not even military. They had not enough soldiers and things to compete with France, England, and Russia all together. They just wanted to live in peace. The Brits even made this that you have to put on German product this made in Germany so that English people do not buy these things with made in Germany because they are made in Germany. But if for some reason it took some years, but then made in Germany was a quality mark, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is now, again. But and it has been at different times. But I mean, how does this reflect then the German character? Because back to the First World War started. You know, it was there was I don't think it was just accidental. It was set up that to try to stir up Austria to declare war, and then Germany had to follow, or they felt they did because they had this sense of honor. toward their treaty with Austria-Hungary. So that's how they got Germany into that. Germany did not want to get involved in that war, but they felt they had no choice. And once they did, they went all out. But, you know, it was how do you connect this Bildung idea in Germans with their war attitude for if they have one or don't have one?
Being gebildet means to have an ethic and a conscience to know what's right and wrong. And I think the French and the Brits at this time did not know about right and wrong. And I'm not really sure if they do know it now. The thing is that our educational system has very much potential that you can do things on your own. You discover things on your own. You write your own articles. You read the books on your own, and you can develop an own mind. And this is not. This cannot happen in the English educational system or in the U.S. educational system, because it is more like stating facts. The knowledge that Asians can have to memorize things and say it. This is not what Bildung means. Bildung means more. It is to connect the things, to be creative, to invent new things, to search for new ways. This is way more than learning about history or about math or something. It is you can play with the different sciences, and you can invent new stuff.
Are you saying that even in the educational system in Germany since 45? That all this thinking for yourself is still allowed, and creativity and independent mindedness? Or maybe it is, but only not in that one, in the one direction.
No, it was in the still in the 50s or 60s, and then came the year 68, and 1968 was the year where they began to the Jews began to steal us our Bildung, our ideal of Bildung. Everything that happened to German school system since 1968 is they stole more and more of this ideal of Wilhelm von Humboldt. It was all about the individual and about developing your science and your knowledge and your ethics and all. And we try to be like the U.S. in anything, and we try to be like the U.S. in the school system also. We have now other exams, and we have other titles now. We are called Bachelor and Master now, as in England and the U.S. And everything that changed in the last 30 or 40 years is a way downwards the spiral to how can I say it? To a poverty in mind.
Okay. Yes. Well, so 1968, you know, and something happened in Germany at that time, right? That's a anniversary of something.
1968 was the year when all the students in Paris and in Germany too were kind of revolting, and I think in America it was the year of the Great Peace Movement about Vietnam with all the hippies and the stuff. And if you look into this movement of the 68, you can see that it was all controlled by Jews, and that it was all about destroying white societies.
That's right. That's right. And it was in the 60s when this really started, and probably 1968 was a kind of a culmination year where they got all this radical stuff going. And every time they get all this radical stuff going, it's always to the detriment of white people. And yet white people get caught up in it. And I know a lot of Germans and, of course, all kinds of Americans and all sorts of people were, you know, thought that was the avant-garde, and that was a positive movement and so on, and supported it all. And in the end, you know, we're being duped. These things are set up for us, just like the assassination in Austria of the Archduke, heir to the throne that started World War One. I mean,
the French Revolution, it was all set up by Jews, and it is they do not want us to be Germanic, not only the Germans but all whites. They need us to be like they describe us. They describe us as non-individuals, as a mass, like ants or insects or something. And this is exactly how Jews think about us. They think we goyim are just like cattle. I think goyim even means cattle or something.
Yes, it does.
And to understand why we are not like this, like the Asian people, they are exactly this. They are no individuals. They are a mass life. I do not want to say they are insects, but they behave like they have no mind on their own. They are not individualistic as we are. And to understand this, we have to go way back to our Germanic forefathers. As all the other ancient Europeans, they lived in a form of democracy. It was a democracy where the men met at the ting place and discussed daily business. When there was something to do, if it was hunting or warfare, they decided who was the best man for the job and elected them him to their leader. Then they followed this leader without questioning. He was responsible for success or failure. The difference between the European way and the Orientalic way is that the East just in the East you just follow the leader, no matter who he is. And we Europeans, we followed the leader we chose.
Okay, first you choose the leader, and then you are obligated to follow him, not to squabble and fight after you choose him. Then you say, well, I don't like this particular thing you're doing or saying, so I'm going to start stirring up a faction against you, and we're going to put up somebody who we'd like to put in your place, and then this is how Parliament functions, right?
Today's the German democracy. The German principle of leadership is to follow voluntarily the leader you choose. People who say that Germans blindly follow authority do not understand this ancient European principle or confuse it with the Asian principle of leadership. The difference is that the European leader is responsible towards his followers. He's legitimated by their common will. This is the source of his power. The Asian leader's power comes from supernatural sources. He is legitimated by the gods or one god or the spirits or whatever. But the European leader is only legitimated by the will of his followers. And one advantage of the European way is that even if they follow the leader or the king or the emperor, the men are free men. As we know, since Thermopylae, where Leonidas fought with 300 Spartans against thousands of slaves, one free man is worth more than 1,000 slaves. The other advantage is that the men will probably choose the right one to lead them. They will choose the best man for the job because they want it done. Mm-hmm. The Asian principle of leadership is they cannot choose. Yeah, he is like the pharaoh in Egypt was elected by the gods or something. But Who says that the pharaoh elected by the gods is the best man for the job? That's yeah. So the European way is to choose the best man for the job.
So you know it's so easy to see that the way the Jews try to make say the leadership principle and this kind of thinking that is natural and deep in the European and particularly German, we're talking about the German right now, character, they try to make it into something that is not what it is. They try to make it into this, like you said, blind following and leave out all the rest and why have they succeeded in convincing all of us that they're right and
yeah. Why they do it is not they lie in this case like they lie a lot in other cases, but they do not understand this principle. They are Semites. They are Orientalic. They cannot understand the European principle of leadership. If you look at Jewish movements like, let's say, psychoanalysis or communism, there's always one leader, like in my examples, Sigmund Freud and Karl Marx, one leader who has the whole authority. He's not questioned whatever. All his followers and scholars are fighting. But this one leader, he's like a sacrosanct, you know, he's like holy. What he says is the law. And this is how Jews act with the principle of leadership. It's the Asian way they do. They cannot understand that we are Europeans, when we follow a man, we stay free men. It is like the difference between Islam and Christendom. Allah says submit, Jesus says decide. A Christian who kneels is up with his face. He sees he kneels because he's not proud or anything. He kneels before his God, but he can see everything. He can see if an enemy comes and something. A Muslim who's praying lies in the dirt and you can cut his neck, you know. This is the difference. Not submission, but following the right man. And this my even enlighten why our modern form of democracy is so rotten. It is not a European form of democracy that we have. We choose no leaders. We choose politicians. These people do not have any personal responsibility.
Yeah,
they just chat about
Kairos,
things,
there a little bit. Unless it's me breaking up, but I think it's you. You said personal responsibility they don't have. And that's today's, politicians. And that's what I wanted to bring out. I want people to know that that's the words we're using. Because personal responsibility of the leader and also of those following him, you know, is very, very strong in this tradition that you're talking about. The leader has personal responsibility. And those who have chosen him then decide, they decide they will follow him. They don't question him. And so there's kind of an unquestioning, attitude. And this is where obedience comes in. And, you know, obedience, Germans are always, they talk about how the Germans have this obedient nature. And this is another misunderstanding. And they talk now about how Germans are so passive. They just go along with what's happening. They don't stand up. They don't fight back. They're not in revolution. Well, that's not the way the Germans think. That's not the way they do things. In fact, Kairos mentioned that the last time he was on my program on the Heretics Hour. He said, we don't go out in the street and demonstrate and so on. That's not our nature. All right, you were going to talk about obedience and the leadership principle and so on. So why don't you just get going with that? We've still got 10 minutes before the end of this half hour.
Okay. I think the problem is that our politicians have no personal responsibility, and they just when they did too much crime to hide as politicians, they just resign and go into a free economy, like our former Minister of Foreign Relations, Josef Fischer, who is of course a Jew. He gets 100,000 euro for every speech he does, and I think all the these good thing, this good principle of European leadership, free men that follow a free man, like the Knights of Arthur, for example, is just changed by Jews and Jewish influence thinkers like Rousseau. Rousseau said, made this direct democratic process to an abstract principle, the volontaire générale, the alleged common sense should rule. Well, this is all a lie. If you want to know the will of the people, you do not need politicians, parliaments, and political parties. You just have to ask the people. It is not a coincidence that we in our so free democracies have no plebiscites. We can just choose our butcher. But in every other part of life, all but politics, the principle of leadership is still in charge. A soccer team has a captain, a ship has one, a firm has a boss, and if it is a good firm, the boss knows about most about the work to be done and does not sit in his chair counting money that others made. To have fat men sitting in chairs and getting highly paid for doing nothing, as the big companies used to do, is against the German spirit. This is another thing. People think we work hard because we are so submissive or obedient, you call it. But it's the opposite. We just have internalized the idea, he who does not work should not eat. And this is in the Bible too, I think. And it's very similar to the Protestant work ethics that made the US of A great nation. The similarity of is has, of course, racial roots. Most white Americans have German roots, and this is what the dumbest leftists who speak of the working class do not see. The work ethics of the working class is a white ethics. Most non-whites are lazy, and this has not only to do with education, but it's a matter of race, a genetic matter.
Well, yeah, when you say they're lazy, see, that's from a German perspective, and this is the thing that makes so much of the rest of the world resent the Germans, because they will always outwork them and outproduce them and do produce better things, and they don't like that. So it's nice, you know, they will go along with saying all these Germans, they're just a bunch of obedient robots, and we wouldn't want to be like them, and they don't have a sense of humor. That was one of the things that I sent you. I was reading this morning of the stereotypes about Germans. Well, there might be some truth in that, because they might not have the same kind of sense of humor that other people do, who find everything funny and just want to laugh all the time. laugh their way through life. But this is this is so, it's important. Now, I think I started asking the question when we got interrupted, was that how have they been convinced that all of this, these qualities of theirs are bad, and, you know, that they hear from the rest of the world, and that they shouldn't be this way, and they should take on this Jewish way. And so what needs to be done there, or what can be done there? And did they lose that Bildung spirit? Must be, I'm sure you would say it's still down in them, but has it seemed to have been lost on the surface?
My problem with this is always that in respect of legal issues, I shall not say anything good about National Socialism. For those who did not listen to the Heretics Hour last time, where I spoke about German law, it's illegal to say anything good about Hitler and the Nazi regime in Germany. It's illegal. So I just have to underline, I speak in general here, I would never say anything that is against the law, of course. I just say this because every time we speak speak about the German soul. And it comes to this point, to Hitler and the Nazis. And they say that this is a proof that the German soul is evil, that they all followed this demon and done so many evil things. So as if Germanism could be limited to those 12 years. But we have thousands of other years in which Germans did the greatest things. We were the best poets, the best philosophers, companies, physicians. We made nearly all of the... We had the power to dominate Europe. This is why our neighbors, all of them, hate us so much. Still today, they hate us. Mm-hmm. And we can see beginning again. While they tell us that the billions of euros Germany spends to Greece and other European countries has to be spent because the Greek are lazy and dumb, which is, if you compare them to us, true in a way, but not the reason why we give them money. The Greeks are told that Germany wants them to save money, while they have an oversized bureaucracy that lives from taxes. The normal Greek family cannot afford their houses, their cars, and even their food any longer. They are told, let me just finish, the Greeks are told we have to save money to pay back the Germans.
Okay. And you know, we're coming up to our break. And I want to continue with this. We have one question, waiting, and, I want to continue with a few more thoughts about this, whole idea but just to sum up, I think it said 60, but yeah, 30 seconds now. We have, it's the Hitler thing. I mean, they have managed to build the Hitler thing up into something that is so overpowering and so overwhelming and so believed everywhere and so well established that the German people are totally frightened of this. They're totally cowed by it, I would say, so that that's what makes them so passive now, because that is such a threat to be called a Hitlerite or anything like that. Of course, it's even illegal. So, ladies and gentlemen, we have our Dietrich Fischer Dieskau song again today, and then we'll be back with
such wildes Tritt. man nicht rieten aus, lass ihre Hunde heulen vor ihres Herren Haus. Die Liebe liebt das Wandern, Gott hat sie so gemacht, von einem zu dem anderen, Gott hat sie so gemacht. Die Liebe liebt das Wandern, Freundlichen, gute Nacht, von einem zu dem anderen, Freundlichen, gute Nacht. Will ich im Traum nicht stören, wer schaut um deine Ruhe, sollst meine Tritt nicht hören, sacht, sacht die Türe zu, schreit im Vorübergehen ans Tor dir gute Nacht, damit du mögest sehen, an dich hab ich gedacht. Schreib im Vorübergehen ans Tor dir gute Nacht, damit du mögest sehen, an dich hab ich gedacht, an dich hab ich gedacht.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carolyn Jaeger with Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn, and my guest is Kairos from Germany. We've had a few technical problems in the first hour. We're running on a late schedule here, but I'm grateful for any of you who are still listening. I know sometimes people figure that the whole thing is not going to come on, so they go away and figure they'll listen to it on download. They'll listen to the program afterwards. So, but for those of you who are listening now, we were talking, and for everyone actually, we were getting into still talking about the German character and how it has developed and why it is the way it is and what's good about it and how it's been maligned and misrepresented. And I would just like to repeat what I was saying when we went to the break, that the Hitler mythology that has been built up into such a huge force is absolutely necessary for these world controllers today, the globalist world power brokers, to keep the German people submissive. Now they really are submissive, you know, submissive and going along with their program with this, because the going back to the Hitler days or bringing back any ideas of Hitler has been made into such a horrendous and fearful thing. And so when people say, well, let's just go past, now this is just me speaking, you know, not Kairos, but let's just go past this, let's drop this, let's leave this alone, this is an unpopular topic, and let's move on and not try to correct not try to do historical revisionism and not try to do correct the Hitler wrong ideas and so on. Let's just move on without that. I'm trying to say all the time that we can't move on without that. We can never really move on without that. And that's why they put so much emphasis on it and have so much invested in it. All right, now I've gone on and on. Kairos, but welcome back to the program. But
you're right, Karin. It's everything they did to make World War II happen. This agitation of the people, one against the other, is happening again. I was with the Greeks and we give them billions and billions of money, but the money is not spent for the Greek families. They actually they have even they have no food any longer. They cannot afford their cars and their houses, and they are told we have to save the money to pay back the Germans. So they hate us. They think we are responsible that they are poor. Of course, nothing of the billions buys one Greek an apple. It's all just ones and zeros in the computers in the banks. It's all to rescue the banks. Yeah, the banks are so thankful. And in Greek and Italy, there are even banks on top of the government now. The EU is not a union of sovereign states, but a corporation to rob the citizens of every European state and make the elites rich. Now they have signed the GSM, the European Stability Mechanism, that makes it possible.
Kairos, I know we're going to go into that, but before we go into that, I told you that there was a question from a listener, and it goes back into the religious issue. And you know, when religion comes up, that brings out more comments and more discussion than anything else, because people can go along with probably everything you've said, but when it comes to the religious issue, people can't go along. And that just is a sign that, you know, that we have some deep divisions and we really do need to address them. Now, this is a question. I don't know if he wants me to give his name. He's someone I'm familiar with. He writes, Kairos says that we should put race above religion, but it is a false contrast, I think. Well, I say that too, but he says Christianity says, quote, you shall honor your father and your mother, unquote, and that gives ethnicity a proper place. The problem with paganism, he writes, is that it is a worship of created things, race or creatures of the imagination, like the gods of a city, etc. I could answer that myself. Then he says, Germany flourished under Christianity for a millennium. Well, how would you answer that, Kairos?
I would say that honor your father and your mother is not a Christian thing, but a Jewish thing. It's in the Old Testament, and it does not mean what we understand of it. You have to depart the European piece of Christendom and the Orientalic piece, and this is very difficult. If you read the Old Testament with open eyes, you can see all the lies of the Jews.
Well, now there. You're going into the thing, and let's not do that, because it goes into a big hole that the Old Testament is just Jewish, and therefore everything in there is wrong. How about we certainly agree that we should honor our father and mother, no matter where you find it. It certainly predates. It's in all cultures. But is honoring your father and your mother enough? He says that gives ethnicity a proper place. Is that enough? I don't think that's enough to say that my race comes first.
I honor
my mother and father.
To worship the spirit of the ancestors, as we pagans do, is more than honor your father and your mother. It is not only about the little family. It is about the whole people, about the whole race. This is something more. We have a kind of unity in the spirituality that is not in Christendom, because Christendom you can become a Christian no matter what race you have. But I agree with you. This is a very deep hole.
Let's go on to the next part. Unless you say
I will certainly. Europe did not flourish into Christendom, but these are fights that we have to do, but under under other circumstances. This is not, you know, the whole question is to accuse paganism. And of course, I react accusing Christendom, but this is not what we have to do. This is not the questioner makes it impossible for me to fulfill slogan and put race above religion. Because
answering this? He says that paganism is a worship of created things. But obviously he's assuming that the Christian God is real, but the pagan gods are not real. Like he says, they're creatures of the imagination. Well, you can say that about all of it.
As important. Important is our racial spirit. No one believes actually that Thor with a hammer is in the sky, or Odin has a horse with eight legs. This is not what we believe.
That's a good point. That's a good point. It's a different kind of. There's not a god in paganism like there is in Christianity.
These are symbols, powers that we, our own European powers that we adore. And the thing is that we have not this one God. This one God is a dictator. And we have more than...
But we have one leader, you know. I don't think... Because see how this is, we have got to accept people's religion and not argue which one is better, but we do have to be clear about race. And that's what we said earlier, so that probably answers it. I thank that writer. I don't know, I think that's the only one. All right. Now you want to get into the European Stability Act and the Eurozone and all of this horrible stuff that goes along with what we were already talking about, changing, taking away, stealing our character and our nature from all white people, not just Germans, so that they can replace themselves as the objects of worship, really, their money, their money bills and so on.
This European stability mechanism makes it possible for a governorship, and no one knows actually who these governors really are, but I think most of us will have a clue about the most likely ethnicity of them, to steer 7 billions, and the amount of the money can be changed anytime, from the European states to rescue banks, states, or whatever. It seemed that it is all about bringing forth a new economic crisis, or just enlarge the present crisis, and agitate one people against another simultaneously. The European Union, or the USSR as we call it, is one huge lie. And this another thing with the German soul. We cannot stand lies, but when we are honest and true, people say we were idealistic idiots. Our truthfulness is seen as a weakness. Then a system that is built on lies, works with lies, consists of lies. We naturally become ill. And it is hard to admit, but it has to be done. In a multicultural society, our strengths really become weaknesses. When we are on our own, just with our kind, all the characteristics of the German soul can develop their great dimensions and lead to community, productivity, and honesty. But if we are forced to live with other races, especially Orientalic races, that are not as honest and peaceful, we have a huge problem. The good characteristics of the German soul turn against ourselves. And this is why multiculturalism is bad for every white country.
Okay.
It's
coming back, I guess. Every white culture. Are you still there?
I'm still there.
Okay.
Every day I hear this is so Germanish, or yes, that this is what we are. And I recognize that we are all so brainwashed. It is just a shame. The guilt cult do not stop with Hitler and the Holocaust. It just begins there. Every time I hear this is so Germanish, I try to to discover what is wrong in this particular situation. And every time I come to the conclusion that it's not the Germanish, but just the system. We are still an occupied country. We have no sovereignty. We are not our masters. We are slaves. When an evil regime dictates evil laws, the German honesty is no longer a good thing. But what is wrong here? Is the honesty wrong or the evil laws? When we have a bureaucracy that is sucking out our life power and people abide the bureaucratic laws, this is not good for them. But what is wrong? Abiding the laws or the bureaucracy? And they say we cannot think on our own. We need someone to tell us what to do, some Führer. But what is thinking on one's own exactly? Well, what is it? The modern philosophical concept of the individual subject is a self-contradiction. The individual is influenced by its environment. You cannot take the environment away. But they say you have to think on your own. How what does it mean? In an empty universe, there's no need to think about anything. And when the universe is not empty, it is not possible not to get influenced. What we can do on our own is make decisions. And for our decisions, we can be held responsible. Modern politics is just like the thinking on one's own thing. Every party claims to have the unique concept to save the day, but there are no real differences between them. The European decisions and about being held responsible for them. This is what the individual subject is about. You are free to choose. The great German philosopher Kant knew that. It's about choice and not about thinking on your own. This is a lie. They want us to think about everything and nothing altogether. They want us to fight fight against each other for example to fight about religious issues as I proved a few minutes ago and this but this is all it's a trap where it just leads to division and it just leads to it takes the unity from us, because every one of us thinks he's so clever and he has discovered the one true way, so I am here with my beliefs and my spirituality and say this and this, and the listener says we fight against each other, and I think sometimes that the Jews doing nothing else but laugh about us all the time. They just laugh about us, how stupid we are. They are so howling together. It's just them against us, and what we do is the opposite. But this is a part of our to be so individualistic. It is not a bad thing to be individualistic, to have the own way, because this is the a reason why we can make decisions, why we can be held responsible for decisions. I think you cannot say that an Asian is in a personal way responsible for his action, because they do not exist in the way we do. They have not all these they are just following, and but we are free men. We decide on our own, so we are responsible on our own. Well, and
I want to ask you something.
Yeah.
If you're done, and I don't want to, but I want you to know I got a question to ask you.
Yeah, I was just trying to explain what I mean, but
yeah. Well, I think we covered that, and so it brings up something very important that we kind of didn't cover in the first hour, and that is you're talking again about the difference between the German and the Asians, and you mean the European and the Asians, pretty much. But then in some ways, but in other ways, the German character is not the same all over Europe. And, you know, they have, there are other national characters. And this is one problem with this idea of white unity or even a white nationalist or a united Europe, because there are differences, and one group criticizes the other for because they're different. And so what would you say about that? I would like you to address the difference, the different characters from between Germans and other Europeans.
Yeah, this is very difficult. Every time you say you're a German nationalist, they say, oh, you're German, okay, you don't like the other whites. And every time you say in Germany you're a white nationalist, they say, oh, you're white nationalist, you do not like Germany. It's very difficult. I think that, you know, we whites should hold together against all the other races, and I think we have we are so outnumbered now that we have no choice but to put all our religious or political and other stuff aside and hold just together to fight against the other races. But the differences you mentioned, they are there. The British people are in a way sometimes you can say they are in a way Jewish, or in German eyes Jewish. They are so materialistic and they just do not care in a way we do. They rape their colonies. Every time Germany had a colony, it prospered and had wealth, and the people living there participated. They were not slaves, but they participated on the German wealth. It was the same in Poland. When there was a large minority of Germans in Poland, the Polish people participated on the wealth the Germans brought, and they hated us for that. They the thing that we think the slaves are subhumans is not that Germans.
The Slavs, you mean? The Slavs.
Yeah, the Slavs.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's not that Germans actually think it. It's the Slavs themselves think they are not as good as we are, and they thought it before World War II, and this was the reason why they killed so many Germans. We all know what was in before World War II. The French people are very very arrogant, they are very feminine in German eyes. And then you have the Scandinavic people in the north. They are far more they are on their own. They are on their eyes, and they have other ethnical background. We are all part of the great white European race, but there's a difference between the Scandinavian people whose forefathers were Vikings, and the Germans the forefathers were Germans, the ancient Germans, as Tacitus describes them in Germania, were people of warriors, but we were not barbers as the Roman perspective of Tacitus and others, of Caesar and all the authors leads to think that the Germans 2,000 years ago were barbarians, but it wasn't so. We had a great culture here, and the Scandinavians had too. I think these differences between the European people are not so big that we cannot or that they have to lead to a struggle and fighting. I think we can overcome them, whereas we cannot overcome the differences between the whites and blacks and Asians and Arabs and all the stuff.
Well, yes, that's true. Of course they're not as great, but they still exist. And do you think that's a reason for the nation states of Europe to continue and not to be absorbed into a one Europe, the United States of Europe type affair like we have here in the United States, which so many people are pushing.
Of course. Every people has a right on its own soil and to preserve its own blood.
You were in the process of saying something pretty important, as I recall, and it was, or I was in the process of going to ask you about.
Yeah, we were with the different white people. Yes. And the differences between them, and that's the differences are not as big as the differences between the whites and other races, but there are differences there.
Yes, and we said yes. You said yes. You thought we needed to continue with the nation states, and I do too. And in that case, then you know, Germany would not be having the question of whether to bail out Greece or not, right? And this whole thing of make it into one big union for the stronger ones to strengthen the weaker ones doesn't work, does it?
Right, because it work if you mix people. As I said, every people has a soul on its own, like we individuals have our own soul. And you cannot mix individual souls, and so you cannot mix the souls of the different people. And it is like bacteria in infecting an organism, or this mass immigration. You change willingly the soul of the people that is invaded by immigrants, and in fact you kill the soul of the people very long before the last white dies. There will be no white soul anymore, and this is why we need a kind of national therapy, or we as Europeans and whites, we need a racial therapy, if you like. So it is we are so held in lies, in relative poverty and darkness, and our soul, or our German soul, suffers from that, and our biggest strengths become weaknesses in this process, because we are invaded, and the question is, how do we get over this? We cannot get over this when we say, let's make a great white kingdom from Russia over Europe to US and Australia. This will not work. The only thing that will work is every people on its own soil. And
yes, and you know, Germans are not going to fight for Greeks when it comes down to it. They'll just start looking out for their own interests, you know, as individuals, or however they do it, you know, in material ways. The Greeks are not going to fight for Germans, and this applies to everything. If you want to have strength, you have to reach into the, you know, right into the character, the soul of a people, touch that. You know, touch that in them. And but if you make it too big and say, oh well, now we're all Europeans, for example, or even in the United States, now we're all Americans. Look, you know, we've got this. You've got the racial thing there too, but we've got these different races, and we're all supposed to think of ourselves as fellow Americans. And they talk about that, you know, in the media, and the politicians talk about that, and in the schools and so on. And young people are kind of brainwashed, and they try to go along with it because that's what they're taught is the only decent way to be. You know, well, we have to think of everybody as equal and we're all Americans. Well, it's not possible to do it. We're not all the same, and we're not going to fight for one another. And we're not going to, you know, sacrifice for one another. I'll sacrifice for my own people.
This is all the same here. All they try to do is to make us more open for immigration, and try to get invaders to integrate, as they say. But this is integration is not the solution. Sorry.
Bless you.
It is a problem. You know, now they say we Germans do not like ourselves enough, so that it is too difficult for immigrants to identify with Germany. So for the sake of the aliens, we have to keep smiling, although the psychological terror that makes us ill since 70 years goes on. And now we even have to fight wars again, because as a side of the U.S. forces, war is a good thing, it seems.
Yes, now. And then the other thing is Germans, one thing I was reading about stereotypes, you know, one thing that is often said about Germans is that they can appear arrogant, or maybe they are arrogant, but at least they appear arrogant. And one example, this was written by a Hungarian, but it's one example he gave was that Polish, whether you're Polish or Russian or Hungarian, or, you know, anything from Germans see you as Eastern European. They don't distinguish between being, you know, those who are Pole, those who are Russians, those who are Hungarians. And that's arrogant to these other people. Well, you know, Germans don't have to do that. I mean, if they can do it or they not do it. I mean, this idea that this is part of this whole idea that we all have to see ourselves as equal and we all have to love up, you know, these others just as we love our own. And this is not right. And if some Germans, because it's okay with me if Hungarians feel arrogant toward Germans or Russians feel arrogant. I mean, it's good to think highly of your own people, of your own particular ethnicity, and I don't see anything wrong with that. And we, you know, the world got along a lot better back then when that was going on than it does now. It's just a bunch of lousy propaganda that's going on. Big lies, lie after lie. And you're right, it makes us sick, sick, sick. It's making us sicker all the time.
They forbid us to be armed and brainwash us until we nearly are zombies. And then they say that we do not like ourselves enough to be attractive for immigration. Yeah? You know? It's not...
That would be a reason not to be attractive. I would try to be as unattractive to immigration as possible.
Yeah, perhaps we should engage more in the guilt cult. This is the last comment to the so-called counter-jihad. The Muslim wants to be left alone with his cultural life. The counter-jihadists want us to control the Muslim's life and make rules, Western rules, for him to follow. Either way is wrong. Muslims should, in the first place, they should be in their sorry homelands and their deserts where they can live whatever way they want, pray whatever God they like, and follow the laws they made themselves. But it is all about this evil empire, Israel. They will not let them live in peace. Our NATO troops storm their lands and bring them freedom and democracy. And when they have freedom and democracy, we import them, the people, into our countries, because their newly freed lands are so poor and their new democracies are so violent, and so they have a right to be here. And here we tell them how to live and whom to pray. And this has to end in a huge disaster. There is no other way out.
Yes, there's no way out. There's no way out. Well, VNN says there's no way out except through the Jews, or the only way out is through the Jews, because the Jews are the problem, you know. And what they mean is we need to recognize that needs to be recognized, and in order to do something about the real problems. Not that there aren't other problem people, that there aren't non-Jews that are problems, that they're not Germans and people of every white ethnicity that are problem people, but they didn't create the problem in the same sense.
If we would cut out or deport or something all the millions of Muslims in Europe, 20 years from now, from this point, we would have again millions of non-white immigrants in our countries, because we just fight the symptoms, but not the disease itself. Think of this: if we excluded the Jews from politics, media, and let's say we make a separate money system, I'm sure within 5 years Europe would be 100% white, 100% rich, and 100% happy again. Not without struggle, but without the great civil war the Jews have prepared for us with multiculturalism. And it's the same in the US. The Jews are more and they're stronger in the US, but they also act more openly, whereas in Europe they mostly hide their Jewish identity. Just exclude them from public life, then there is no need to deport or kill anyone. Just take their power and America will be a white country again in some years.
That's right. I agree with you. All right, let's go back to the, you know, I think we've made that real clear. Let's go back to the European stability mechanism, because I did say we were going to talk about that, and you did want to, and you did start, but we may have gotten off of that because of our interruptions due to Skype problems. So, you know, did you finish everything you wanted to say there? This thing is not in place yet, is it? There's previous ones. This is the latest one since May.
It is in place.
It was already voted on.
Our politicians say I do not recall who it was. He said we do one thing, and when there's no riot, we do the next thing. They have a plan. This plan goes for 20. 30 or more years, and they know exactly what they want. They want this European Union to be cut all the power of all the sovereignty of the different states and have one big European land that is filled with millions and millions of niggers and Arabs and whatever Asians and stuff, and so that we are all integrate and mingle and mix up and
That's exactly right. Now you know, so this the Germans were against these, but they couldn't stand up to the pressure to allow them to go through. So now they've gone along, and now we've got this thing, but it says it's going to become operational in July of this year, next month. It's not operational yet, but they're still they're supplementing it with money. But everybody has to put in a whole lot of money. There's going to be this huge amount of money.
You're right.
Many billions, and whoever needs it, they get it.
They decided to do it in May, and they will do it, and there's nothing we can do about it.
Yes. Well, now this is, you know, these things get, so, what you just said, there's nothing we can do about it. We talk about what we need to do, and then we find that whatever they're doing, there's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah, this is, perhaps, it is, one of the, of the worst things to discover, that there is really not much that we can do against the so-called a new world order. It will come, and I think it will prevail for some time. And I think when we are very lucky, there will be a white society after it, because some of us survive, but many people will die, and there will be some years of real darkness and real destruction. Most likely, I do not hope that it will be so, but it seems so. But I think what we can do are the little things. Begin with basics. Enjoy our great culture. Read the classics. Listen to the great companies. Go watch the churches and the monuments or ancestor spirit, no matter if pagan or Christian. It is from our ancestors. Become proud again. Get your chin up. Do not change side of the street when non-whites near you. Then become spiritual again. Read the Bible. Read especially the Old Testament. Discover the secrets of the ancient.
Can you be saying that when you just said that was the wrong thing to do? The Old Testament was Jewish.
You have to try to understand the importance of a white Christendom that honors its European roots but neglects its Orientalic parts. And you have to know what is in the books to do so.
I'm going to talk about white nationalist leadership on Monday. I just felt compelled to do that. And You know, I think this is one problem, that this doesn't sound like strong enough leadership. I realize, you know, but because in America, people can do more than that. And focusing on culture, which a lot of white nationalist so-called leaders, that's what they are recommending. That they're building an intellectual foundation or something. Well, that's, you know, it's because they like that kind of thing. But what is that doing? What is that doing for unity? I don't think it's doing very much.
It is about creating a foundation to get the power later, because we.
That's what Greg Johnson says. You sound like you're reading Greg Johnson. Is that right? That's what comes exactly.
I even citated them at the beginning of the program, because I like this word metapolitics, because we it is not time for a political party now, because a racial aware white party will not stand 5 minutes in the public life in America or in Europe. It will not stand for 5 minutes.
I don't see why not, because there's been a national German national German National Party, the NPD, in Germany for years and years and years, and it's still there.
Yeah, but so, it has no real power.
And well, of course, right now in Hungary there's there's right wing parties, and there's other right wing parties. There's a right wing party in Greece, and it just got some delegates to the or parliamentarians to their parliament, 12, I think. So you know, they're making some headway. I think this is the time to start moving in this direction. I don't think it's the time to just sit around and read books, because I think that a lot of people could be brought on board. But I think also that we need to get a, let's see how much time we get. We got some time yet, 8 minutes. We need to get some better leadership. We need to think in terms of leadership. And I think it's very interesting what you were saying earlier about the German idea of leadership and how a leadership principle. Now I understand, this is difficult when you're dealing with people in all different places. That's why people need to form smaller groups, like in European nation states or in the United States, in smaller areas, and form their own, I guess you could call it a cell or something. I don't like to use that word. But, form their own organization and with a leader. And this is why just being on the internet and reading these, going to these websites and these leaders and so on, which I've been doing for quite some time, exactly as you're saying, the ones you're talking about. But I'm becoming disillusioned with what's being offered and what's being done by these people, and I'm rethinking the whole leadership idea. But I haven't talked to you about that, so I'm just saying that out of the blue.
I totally agree that publishing articles is not enough. That is what I'm saying. But I do not think that it is wise to be, in Germany, if you're being open nationalistic, you are out of public life. And for people who have nothing to lose, this is the right way. But other people may have families, and I think you know how they treat people here when they discover that they think nationalistic. It is
I think we have to attack that, not in Germany, but in the United States. It's not against the law to be nationalistic, but there's no way to be nationalistic as an American nationalistic because of the tremendous variety of races and mixing of races here. So, there's Canada, there's Australia. They have more strict laws, but even so, there's nothing that says that you can't be a nationalist. I mean, the Greeks there's nationalist parties there. There's the nationalist parties in Hungary, as I said. There's nationalist parties in every nation, but a lot of them go real weak in order to get along and get more votes. The big tent. Okay, I guess what I'm going to be talking about is the big tent philosophy. And what most people are going for now is a real big tent, and I don't think you can do that. So we have to find a way to congregate in small tents and be more purist and be more true to our beliefs. And I think we might start getting somewhere. And then at least there would be something for people to look at besides just reading the classics and thinking about the great civilization that we built, you know, and looking at it, because what about tomorrow? Anyway, I didn't know I was going to go off on all that.
What one has to understand about the German soul is that our soul is so ill and so weakened of 70 years of psychological warfare. The war didn't end for us. They still fight against us. And as we said, the second wave came in 1968, and then there were new waves in the 90s, and it's all about breaking us, this is what one has to understand when I say read the classics, be proud. It is not that I say stop there and stay at home and read Goethe. But the German people have to understand that they should do it. They are not proud. They do not know the classics. That's
not going to change in that way. I don't think it's going to change. And to go back to what can be done in the United States and some other countries, and other than certain Germany's, probably in Austria are the two worst ones as far as the laws go. So, but what can be done is that we can set up something that will show people that there is an alternative. I don't think we're showing much of an alternative except in words. We need to go a little bit beyond words into organizing and show that there's an alternative, even if there are not too many people going for it. I think the big tent idea is watering down our message so that it's really not appealing to anybody. You still get all the flack from the Jewish press and Jewish government authorities and so on, and you're not gaining anything much. So we're giving away too much. We're giving away too many of our points and accepting too much, so that what we end up with, well, we're not going to end up with anything. Well, I know what I wanted to say. You talked about how bad it's going to be. And because of that, that's why we need to do more than what we're doing right now. We need to. Because it is so, European stabilization vehicle, whatever it's called, mechanism, stability mechanism. I mean, when more and more of those things are put in place, the more difficult it will be to get people to stand up against some of this stuff. So I think we're in a good time now, because there are movements that are being fairly successful, and we need to build on that. But I'm not saying you can do it in Germany, but let's get back to we've got 2 minutes, Kairos. How would you like to close off? Well, we don't have 2 minutes. We have 1 minute. How would you like to close off for what you were saying today? I'm sorry.
I think let's prepare. The Jews arranged nothing less than World War III behind the scene, and when the curtain falls, it will become very, very uncomfortable for whites all over the world, and we have to be ready for that. Be ready to protect your children from non-white barbarians with full force, and be ready to be accused to be a racistic slaughterer when you do so. Prepare for darker times, for the night, and hope that we, in the new morning comes, those of us that were lucky enough to survive can live in a free and in a white society.
Well, that's a very dark forecast, isn't it? But there's every reason to make it. I think that maybe just hearing such dark forecasts might get some people a little bit out of their doldrums, Kairos, I want to thank you so much for coming on today. It's been very enlightening. I'm really sorry for all the problems we've had. We will edit them out in our...
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit Carolyn's website at carolynyager.com.